add to the prayer list. Wes had told me Wednesday night, and then Bob this morning. Ethan, and help me out, Pendergraft, and wife Adriana. Ethan is a teacher there at Gentry Public Schools, and I think several years ago he had a tumor on his pituitary gland, and then this past week that kind of came back up, and he had to have emergency brain surgery. And come to find out, his wife also has the same sort of condition afflicting her, and she's going to have brain surgery this week. And so keep that family in your prayers as well. I'll kind of make an announcement on myself. If I happen to get emotional this morning, it's just this morning. I don't know. I've just, the last 3 or 4 weeks when I get up here, there's just some emotion gets a hold of me. And so if I start to cry, I don't know. It's just that time of year. Just bear with me. We will get through this. I want to welcome everyone here. Shouldn't even be worried about it. It's a fifth Sunday. There's a great chance for pie later, so I ought to be settled down. I think it's just sort of the culmination of the last 2 years. It's just been such a strange time. And I think for myself, I've just second-guessed myself almost every step of the way. And maybe not just because of the pandemic, but mostly because of the pandemic. But then on top of that, just this past year, we've had racism, we've had injustice, we've had social unrest. There has been so much, just on a national level and on a world level, crises that we've dealt with. And I'm sure there have been several crises that you all have dealt with personally, that my family has dealt with personally, and every step of the way. Not just this year, but I think so many times in my life, I've just second-guessed my response to those crises. How should I respond? And every time I speak up and I say something in the back of my mind, I think you probably should have kept your mouth shut. And then when I do keep my mouth shut and I don't say anything, I think somewhere in the back of my mind, that was probably when you should have been bolder and you should have said something. And again, with everything that's going on in the world, there have been times when I've went out and did the things that I wanted to do, and I thought I probably should have stayed home. And there have been other times when I stayed at home and I thought, why didn't I go out and do what I wanted to do? There's just been so many times like that over this last year and a half, and I say, well, really, over my whole life, and I say, I know that even going forward, that this isn't the end, that there are going to be other times in our lives where I am going to second guess my response to a crisis, whether it's a shared crisis that we are all going through, or whether it's a personal or a family crisis, that I'm going to second guess myself and ask, how should I respond to this? Should I speak up or should I shut up? Should I be out front leading or should I be behind the scenes quietly doing what I'm supposed to be doing? What is the faithful way to respond to a crisis? Maybe some of you have shared in my second guessing and you've second guessed your response and you've thought, maybe I should have responded differently. Maybe I should have spoken up, or maybe I shouldn't have, or maybe you haven't second guessed yourself. Maybe you've been quite confident in your response, but you've second guessed the response of other people and you said they shouldn't be responding that way, that they shouldn't be acting that way. That's not the faithful way to respond to a crisis. Maybe you've really been frustrated by the way other people have responded. I want us to think about that for a second and think about this, that no matter how we respond to a crisis, there will always be other people who respond differently. And I think what happens in a community of faith, not just a local congregation, because of social media now, we're all kind of in this together. And we can go through some of this together. And what happens when we are all responding differently to a crisis is that sometimes it can create tension. Sometimes it creates conflict and animosity. We're not only second-guessing ourselves and thinking, man, if I was just more spiritual, then I would respond like them. I hear I hear this as a preacher a lot. I've been with people as they are putting loved ones to rest and the grief that people have. And sometimes they say, I know I'm being selfish, but I wish they were still here with me. And I think, do you really think that? Do you really think that grieving is selfish? But maybe we look at other people and they don't grieve the way that we grieve, and we think, if I was just more spiritual, or if I was just more faithful, maybe I could grieve like them. Maybe when someone goes through something like a job loss or a difficulty in their family, and we look at other people in the church and we think, if I was just more spiritual, if I was just more faithful, then I would respond like them. Or sometimes we might lift ourselves up and we might say, if they were more spiritual, if they were more faithful, then maybe they would respond more like me. When we respond differently to a crisis, that's what is always going to happen. When there is a crisis, people will respond differently than us, than you, and unfortunately, sometimes that creates tension and conflict and even resentment. So this morning, I thought we would talk about who's right. How should we respond to a crisis or a conflict? A tragedy, grief, loss, hardship, brokenness. What is the faithful response to a crisis? And so, as I thought about that question in mind, we went to the days of Elijah. And I want us to think about what happened during that time. Elijah was a prophet of God, and he prophesied during the days of King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. And Ahab, of course, as I said, was married to the wicked Queen Jezebel, and they were horrible. In fact, the scripture tells us that Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than all of the kings of Israel who were before him. That is quite a legacy. And of course, Elijah prophesied against King Ahab, and he said that it wasn't going to rain for years. And then Elijah ran away, and he went and he lived by a brook, and ravens came by, and they fed him. And then eventually, Elijah goes to the Gentile city of Zarephath, and there he's fed by a widowed woman there. Now, meanwhile, back in Israel, there was a drought. And of course, with the drought brings famine because nothing is growing and people are suffering. And Ahab and Jezebel are searching for Elijah to end this drought. And they're looking everywhere for him, and they are slaughtering the prophets of God. And the people are suffering. You talk about a crisis. And this went on for over 3 years. And I get pretty impatient after 3 hours. No rain. And the king and queen are searching for this troublemaker from their perspective, right? That has caused it not to rain. No rain brings famine and sickness, and people are dying. They're searching for Elijah, meanwhile slaughtering the prophets of God, meanwhile continuing to do what brought all this on in the first place, which is worship the idols of Baal. They continue in their evilness, and the people are suffering, and the prophets of God are being slaughtered. And so when Elijah is in Zarephath in 1 Kings 18, verse 1, it tells us that after many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, "Go, show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth." So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. Now Samaria at this time was the capital of Israel. And it says that Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. So Obadiah is going to be Ahab's sort of chief of staff, if you will. It says that now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. And when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water. And I want us to just sit right here with this text for a minute. Here you have Obadiah, who is working in Ahab's house, right? In fact, he's Ahab's right-hand man, but he is faithful to the Lord. He fears God. He's not doing what Elijah did. He's not a prophet of God. He's not boldly speaking out about what Ahab is doing. He's working quietly behind the scenes. And he hid 100 prophets of the Lord in caves. He hid these prophets in caves because he fears the Lord. Now, I want us to think about that just for a second. Was Obadiah any less faithful than Elijah? No. Now, he wasn't as outspoken. He didn't do the same things that Elijah did, but he was no less faithful than Elijah. Think about the prophets. Think about those 100 prophets who were hid by 50s in the cave. I don't know for how long. Maybe it was the entire 3 years, but they spent that time hiding in the cave, patiently waiting for the storm to pass by. Were they any less faithful than Elijah? No. Were they any less faithful than Obadiah? No. They patiently waited and were faithful to the Lord. They didn't do what Elijah and Obadiah did, but they were faithful to the Lord. Obadiah didn't do what the prophets or what Elijah did, but he was faithful to the Lord. Elijah didn't do what Obadiah did or what the prophets did, but Elijah was faithful to the Lord. Verse 5 tells us that Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go through the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys. Perhaps we may find grass and save the horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." So they divided the land between them to pass through it. Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. And you picture what is happening here. Everything is falling apart, and it has been for years now. And they're just so incredibly desperate to find some green pasture that they're going out and searching for them, just looking for a small oasis. Maybe they can find some to save the livestock at this point who are about to die because there's been no rain. And things are dying off and nothing is growing. And so Ahab goes one way and he sends Obadiah in the other, his right-hand man, to try and find some. And verse 7 says that as Obadiah was on the way, behold, Elijah met him. And Obadiah recognized him and fell on his face and said, "Is it you, my lord Elijah?" And he answered him, "It is I. Go, tell your lord, behold, Elijah is here." Now, Obadiah has been right beside Ahab this whole time. And they've been looking for Elijah everywhere. And Obadiah knows that if they find Elijah, they're probably going to kill him because that might put an end to this drought. And so Obadiah says to Elijah, he says, "How have I sinned that you would give your servant to the hand of Ahab to kill me? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my Lord has not sent to seek you. And when they would say he is not here, he would take an oath of the kingdom or nation and that they had not found you. And now you say, 'Go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here.'" Obadiah's like, that's not my gig. I'm not the outspoken guy. I'm not the go proclaim anything guy. I'm the work behind the scenes guy. And so now he says, "You're telling me, go tell my boss, hey, Elijah's over here and he wants to talk to you." That terrifies me because he's wanted to kill you for a long time and he's looking everywhere for you. And as soon as I have gone from you, he says, "The Spirit of the Lord will carry you away, and I know not where. And so when I come and tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me, although I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Has it not been told, my Lord, what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, how I hid 100 men and the prophets by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water? And now you say, 'Go tell your Lord, behold, Elijah is here, and he will kill me.'" Obadiah is terrified. As soon as I go and tell Ahab, "Hey, Elijah is over here, he wants to talk to you," Ahab is going to go and try and find you, and the Spirit of God is going to carry you off somewhere, and Ahab won't be able to find you, and he's going to kill me when that happens. Is Obadiah being irrational in his fear? No. I think that's probably the most rational thing to think in this situation. It's a very rational thing to think here. Sometimes it is very rational to say, "This is dangerous. I don't know about this." But even doing this, Obadiah is not being unfaithful to the Lord. Verse 15 says that Elijah says, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today." So Obadiah went and met Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. Sometimes we do have to step outside of our comfort zones and do what needs to be done. He goes and tells Ahab that Elijah is over here. And so Ahab goes and speaks to Elijah. And you remember the big showdown between at Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal and Elijah calling down the fire from heaven. And the fire comes down and consumes Yahweh God's sacrifice. And so God proves himself to be the true God. And then the prophets of Baal are destroyed and the rains come back to Israel and they all live happily ever after, right? Well, no, that's not how it works out, because that's not really how real life works out. God did prove himself to be God, but of course when Jezebel finds out what Elijah has done, she wants to kill Elijah, and so Elijah goes and runs and hides again. And he ends up at Mount Horeb, which is also Mount Sinai, and he ends up there waiting for God. And God finally shows up to Elijah, and he comes in a soft, still voice. And in 1 Kings 19, at the end of verse 13, it says, "There came a voice to him, to Elijah, and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And he said, 'I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away.'" Now, on one hand, he's right. The people of Israel have been incredibly unfaithful to God. And many of them have worshipped idols and have been unfaithful to God. And Elijah feels like, look at what he says. "I, only I am left. I'm the only faithful one in Israel. I'm the only one that's doing things right. I'm the only one committed to you, and now they want to kill me." Why would he feel that way? Because he feels all alone. And he looks around and he says, "I'm the only one doing the things that I'm doing, so I must be the only one who's faithful. Everyone has forsaken you, God. Everyone has turned their back on you, God. I'm the only one that's doing what's right." Have you guys ever felt the same way? Ever look around the world and say, everything is falling apart. Everybody is doing wrong but me. Everybody is faithful. I'm the only one doing what should be done. That's what happens in a crisis. Sometimes we beat ourselves up. Sometimes we beat everybody else up. Sometimes we think I'm the only one doing it right. And sometimes we think everybody else is doing it right and I can't get it right. Because it's difficult and it's challenging to know how do you faithfully navigate a crisis. Now, of course, there were some people in Israel who were downright, no doubt about it, unfaithful to God. But God continues to have this conversation with Elijah about what to do next. And God gives him some next steps. And I want us to pay close attention to verse 18. He says, "Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." A subtle reminder that Elijah, you are not the only one who is faithful. You might be doing the only thing that you are doing, and that's okay. You might be the only one speaking this bold truth to Ahab and Jezebel, but you're not the only one who hasn't bowed his knee to Baal. You're not the only one who has been faithful. In fact, there have been thousands who haven't bowed their knee. There are thousands who have been faithful. Elijah had just had a conversation with Obadiah. Obadiah had been faithful. He had been working quietly behind the scenes, right under Ahab's nose as a spy of sorts, right there in Ahab's house. But he remained faithful to the Lord. He had just talked about those 100 prophets that were hiding faithfully and patiently in a cave for the storm to pass by. There were thousands of people in Israel that were faithful to the Lord. But Elijah felt like he was the only one. I think for us, we have to admit that faithfulness can take different forms. There's a time to be like the 100 that hid in the cave. And you can hide and still be faithful. You can take a stand and you can still be faithful. You can speak boldly and still be faithful. You can work quietly behind the scenes and still be faithful. I think we have to acknowledge that you don't have to feel like that you let God down because you haven't responded to the crisis the same way others have. I think we need to admit that. That when we go through a personal crisis or a shared crisis, and we look at the way others respond and we say, man, I seem to be crying a lot. I seem to be broken a lot. I feel scared. You don't have to feel like you let God down because you haven't responded the same way that others have responded. Because if that's true, then you have to admit that, number two, that others haven't necessarily let God down because they haven't responded to the crisis the same way that you have. Just because you can't see or you don't understand what other people are doing, that doesn't mean other people aren't just as faithful to God as you are. And that's a lesson that Elijah had to learn. Elijah, just because you can't see what everybody's doing and have been doing for these 3.5 years, just because you can't see their deeds, just because you can't see their faith, doesn't mean they haven't been just as faithful to God as you have been. When there is a crisis, we are all going to respond different ways, but that doesn't mean we all can't be faithful. But at the end of the day, we have to acknowledge that we are saved and part of God's kingdom because of the faithfulness of Jesus. Because he saved us from that greatest crisis of all. Because of his steadfast love and his faithfulness. But because he saved us, there's room in his kingdom for all kinds of people. That there's room in his kingdom for Elijahs who boldly speak truth to power. Who tell Ahab and Jezebel when they are wrong and when they need to stop. There's room in his kingdom for Elijahs, but there's also room in his kingdom for Obadiahs who work quietly behind the scenes. That there's room in his kingdom for those who just patiently wait until the storm blows over. And there's room in his kingdom like that widow who simply practiced hospitality and selflessly loved her neighbor. There's room in God's kingdom for all kinds of faithfulness. But at the end of the day, how do we respond to crisis? And the answer is love. How do we respond to a crisis? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. What does that look like? We know what it looks like. Love is patient. So in a crisis, be patient. Love is kind. So in a crisis, be kind. Love isn't rude, so in a crisis, don't be rude. Love isn't self-seeking, so in a crisis, don't seek your own interest, but the interest of others. Love keeps no record of wrongs, so in a crisis, don't keep a record of wrongs. We know what to do, don't we? Sometimes it can be difficult because when we lose someone we love or when our community or our country or our world is going through something difficult, we second guess ourselves and we say, if I was more spiritual or if I was more faithful, or we second guess other people and we say, if they were more spiritual or if they were more faithful. But we need the same reminder that Elijah needed, that faithfulness can take different forms. And yes, there is a time when we need to call out sin and say that is wrong. But there's also a time when it's okay to be quiet. And it's okay to work behind the scenes. And it's okay to patiently wait. But whoever we are, and whatever we do, let's be people of love. Who love the Lord our God with all of our heart and mind and soul and our strength. And who love our neighbors as ourselves. And remember that it wasn't our faithfulness that saved us, but it was the faithfulness of Jesus, and so we entrust ourselves to him. This morning, if you are ready to put Christ on in baptism, to be rescued from the biggest crisis of all, death itself, to be raised to live a new life and to commit yourself to the Lord, if you're ready for that, or if you need the prayers or encouragement of the congregation, make that need known as together we stand and we sing.